Chapter 24. The Spirit of Unrest. During the following fortnight, two things happened which materially altered Mike's position in the bank. The first was that Mr. Bickersdyke was elected a Member of Parliament. He got in by a small majority, amid scenes of disorder unusual even in Kenningford. Smith, who went down on the polling day to inspect the revels and came back with his hat smashed in, reported that, as far as he could see, the electors of Kenningford seemed to be in just that state of happy intoxication which might make them vote for Mr. Bickersdyke by mistake. Also, it had been discovered, on the eve of the poll, that the bank manager's opponent, in his youth, had been educated at a school in Germany, and had subsequently spent 2 years at Heidelberg University. These damaging revelations were having a marked effect on the warm-hearted patriots of Kenningford, who were now referring to the candidate in thick but earnest tones as the German spy. "So that, taking everything into consideration," said Smith, summing up, "I fancy that Comrade Bickersdyke is home." And the papers next day proved that he was right. 157, said Smith as he read his paper at breakfast. "Not what one would call a slashing victory. It is fortunate for Comrade Bickersdyke, I think, that I did not send those very able speeches of his to the Clarion." Till now, Mike had been completely at a loss to understand why the manager had sent for him on the morning following the scene about the cheque, and informed him that he had reconsidered his decision to dismiss him. Mike could not help feeling that there was more in the matter than met the eye. Mr. Bickersdyke had not spoken as if it gave him any pleasure to reprieve him. On the contrary, his manner was distinctly brusque. Mike was thoroughly puzzled. To Smith's statement that he'd talked the matter over quietly with the manager and brought things to a satisfactory conclusion, he had paid little attention. But now he began to see light. "Great Scott, Smith," he said. "Did you tell him you'd send those speeches to the papers if he sacked me?" Smith looked at him through his eyeglass and helped himself to another piece of toast. "I am unable," he said, "to recall at this moment the exact terms of the very pleasant conversation I had with Comrade Bickersdyke on the occasion of our chance meeting in the Turkish bath that afternoon. Thinking things over quietly now that I have more leisure, I cannot help feeling that he may possibly have read some such intention into my words. You know how it is in these little chats, Comrade Jackson. One leaps to conclusions. Some casual word I happen to drop may have given him the idea you mention. At this distance of time, it is impossible to say with any certainty. Suffice it that all has ended well. He did reconsider his resolve. I shall be only too happy if it turns out that the seed of the alteration in his views was sown by some careless word of mine. Perhaps we shall never know." Mike was beginning to mumble some awkward words of thanks when Smith resumed his discourse. "Be that as it may, however," he said, "we cannot but perceive that Comrade Bickersdyke's election has altered our position to some extent. As you have pointed out, he may have been influenced in this recent affair by some chance remark of mine about those speeches. Now, however, they will cease to be of any value. Now that he's elected, he has nothing to lose by their publication. I mention this by way of indicating that it is possible that, if another painful episode occurs, he may be more ruthless." "I see what you mean," said Mike. "If he catches me on the hop again, he'll simply go ahead and sack me." "That," said Smith, "is more or less the position of affairs." The other event which altered Mike's life in the bank was his removal from Mr. Waller's department to the fixed deposits. The work in the fixed deposit was less pleasant, and Mr. Gregory, the head of the department, was not of Mr. Waller's type. Mr. Gregory, before joining the home staff of the New Asiatic Bank, had spent a number of years with a firm in the Far East, where he had acquired a liver and a habit of addressing those under him in a way that suggested the mate of a tramp steamer. Even on the days when his liver was not troubling him, he was truculent, and when, as usually happened, it did trouble him, he was a perfect fountain of abuse. Mike and he hated each other from the first. The work in the fixed deposits was not really difficult when you got the hang of it, but there was a certain amount of confusion in it to a beginner, and Mike, in commercial matters, was as raw a beginner as ever began. In the two other departments through which he had passed, he'd done tolerably well. As regarded his work in the postage department, stamping letters and taking them down to the post office was just about his form. It was the sort of work on which he could really get a grip. And in the cash department, Mr. Waller's mild patience had helped him through. But with Mr. Gregory, it was different. Mike hated being shouted at. It confused him. And Mr. Gregory invariably shouted. He always spoke as if he was competing against a high wind. With Mike, he shouted more than usual. On his side, it must be admitted that Mike was something out of the common run of bank clerks. The whole system of banking was a horrid mystery to him. He did not understand why things were done, or how the various departments depended on and dovetailed into one another. Each department seemed to him something separate and distinct. Why they were all in the same building at all, he never really gathered. He knew that it could not be purely from motives of sociability, in order that the clerks might have each other's company during slack spells. That much he suspected, but beyond that he was vague. It naturally followed that after having grown little by little under Mr. Waller's easy-going rule to enjoy life in the bank, he now suffered a reaction. Within a day of his arrival in the fixed deposit, he was loathing the place as earnestly as he had loathed it on the first morning. Smith, who had taken his place in the cash department, reported that Mr. Waller was inconsolable at his loss. "I do my best to cheer him up," he said, "and he smiles bravely every now and then. But when he thinks I am not looking, his head droops and that wistful expression comes into his face. The sunshine has gone out of his life." It had just come into Mike's, and more than anything else was making him restless and discontented. That is to say, it was now late spring. The sun shone cheerfully on the city, and cricket was in the air. And that was the trouble. In the dark days, when everything was fog and slush, Mike had been contented enough to spend his mornings and afternoons in the bank and go about with Smith at night. Under such conditions, London is the best place in which to be, and the warmth and light of the bank were pleasant. But now things had changed. The place had become a prison. With all the energy of one who had been born and bred in the country, Mike hated having to stay indoors on days when all the air was full of approaching summer. There were mornings when it was almost more than he could do to push open the swing doors and go out of the fresh air into the stuffy atmosphere of the bank. The days passed slowly, and the cricket season began. Instead of being a relief, this made matters worse. The little cricket he could get only made him want more. It was as if a starving man had been given a handful of wafer biscuits. If the summer had been wet, he might have been less restless. But as it happened, it was unusually fine. After a week of cold weather at the beginning of May, a hot spell set in. May passed in a blaze of sunshine. Large scores were made all over the country. Mike's name had been down for the MCC for some years, and he'd become a member during his last season at Wrykyn. Once or twice a week, he managed to get up to Lord's for half an hour's practice at the nets, and on Saturdays the bank had matches in which he generally managed to knock the cover off rather ordinary club bowling. But it was not enough for him. June came, and with it more sunshine. The atmosphere of the bank seemed more oppressive than ever.